Hey, this is Easter with Crossroads. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Hannah, and we are so very glad that you're here with us today.
We're glad because it turns out that 80% of us don't feel loved at all, and Easter is like it's a love story.
It's a huge love story. So no matter who you are or where you come from, we're glad to hear, and we're glad that you're gonna hear it today. I'm especially excited because we're talking about love, love stories. I'm a sucker for love stories. Kyle makes fun of me because I like watching Hallmark. I know.
But
Kyle, I'm telling you, the reason I like Hallmark is cheesy and it's awesome, but also they like insert the love hits in there, the music.
Okay.
It's about the music.
I like that. I made a couple of really popular love mixtapes in high school.
Okay, so you get it. You
understand.
And you know what? Thinking about love and mixtapes, I got married in COVID.
You did? Congratulations.
And one of the songs that comes to mind for me is that I found love in a hopeless place. Like, hello, COVID. Come on.
I found love.
Yes, that song.
That's exactly right.
You got it. It's the right key.
I'm excited because I just want to know what love is, actually.
Ah, everyone does. It's like, I want to know what love is. I know you're singing.
And
I know you're singing.
I want to know it because I heard this other thing.
What?
You've heard it. All you need is love.
Oh,
have you heard
come
that?
Come on. I knew where you were going. All you need is love.
Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
All you need is love.
Love. Love is all you need. Good job, Kyle. That was awesome.
Love. We long for love and celebrate it wherever we find it. And yet the latest surveys say that 80% of us don't feel loved. If love is love wherever and whenever you find it, why are we still so lonely, afraid, and heartbroken? The Bible tells us that love actually has a name and is incarnate in the person of Jesus. The ultimate definition of love, who put that love into action when he laid down his life. Love was made flesh, and that flesh was tempted. It was accused. It was misunderstood. It was torn and it suffered unto death. For you, love as God defines it isn't a feeling. Love is an action. And Easter is a love story, an act of love for a heartbroken world, the fulfillment of the promise that no matter what has happened in your life, what you've done, or how far you feel from God, love says you were worth dying for. The good news of Easter is that we don't have to wonder if we are loved or what that love will do for us. Love has come to save us all.
One man come in the name of love. One man come and go. One man come, he justify. One man to overthrow.
Forever. Yeah, love is a big deal. I know that right now in our movie industry, CG is ruling the day. Comic heroes are ruling the day. Marvel, all those things are ruling the day. But there's just something about a love story, isn't it? There's just something that draws us to it. I like Iron Man, but I would rather spend more time on Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow. That sort of love thing there is very fascinating for us. What is it that we like a good love story? I think what it is it's the transcendent nature of God that's put into stories, and we connect with that story. Some people think that, well, these romantic comedies, they're setting up unrealistic expectations for the relationships we have. No relationship can be that lovey-dovey that long-term. Time magazine a couple years ago said this about that dynamic. They said, we need to live by stories that help us deal with tough realities. We all need hope in our lives, and Hollywood trades on hope. This is why movies are there, to make us feel, to make us want, to make us connect with it. Because we all need it. I know I do. I've wrestled most of my life with wanting love, needing love, and not feeling loved. How much of that was due to me being adopted? How much of that was due to always feeling like I was on the outside of things? I never could hit the tier that I wanted to. How much of that was due to I felt like I couldn't earn my parents' love and approval because I didn't have the grades that them as valedictorians had? How much of that was due to just my paranoia that people are talking about me and thinking negatively about me when they're actually not? Or maybe you are actually right now, man. Maybe you are. I wonder, how many choices do I make in order to be approved by others and some feel some sort of love by others? Some of us have walked out on God because maybe we're part of a church and we didn't feel any love in that church. And so if God's connected with that church, then I can't have anything to do with that. What is love? That's our problem. We all have different ideas of what love is. Some of our aspects of love are just very emotional and subjective, but there is a form of love that's very objective, it's knowable in history, and it's physical. The book of 1 John chapter 3:16 says of Jesus, this is how we know love, that Jesus laid down his life for us. I don't know how well acquainted you are with that story. I want to fill you in a little bit with it today, but that story is the basis of love. That story is the basis of Easter. It's why you and I are here today celebrating today. I'm going to take a look at the book of Luke today in the Bible. It's a story from the Holy Week of Jesus, the last week of Jesus' life. It's known as Holy Week with a bunch of things that took place on that week. We're looking at today things that took place on Friday when he was crucified, and Sunday when he was actually risen from the dead. Now, later on in our service, we're going to have a blowout time of worshiping and connecting with God through song, standing, and all that stuff. I love doing that on Easter. We're going to have that coming today. It's going to be great, but it's going to be really great if we understand the context for why you would sing. Why would you stand before a God and actually say loving things to him and maybe sense his love? I want to make sure we understand the picture of what that is today. Here's the scene where we are. Jesus has been unjustly arrested. He's been unjustly tried. They broke all the rules in terms of how the trial was supposed to go, the number of witnesses that should have been there, should have had the trial at night. They break all of these things that are their own laws, the Jews, their own laws, and they unjustly arrest him, and they unjustly try him, they unjustly convict him. Then they take him out to be crucified. Crucifixion is the most painful form of execution that human beings have ever invented. That's where the word excruciating comes from. It's the worst there possibly is. While he's then hanging on a cross, here's where our story picks up. Luke chapter 23, verse 32. Two others who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. And when they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. So he's got two other guys who are being crucified with him, and these people are bad dudes. They're bad dudes. I don't mean like they're bad, they're cool bad. No, they're bad guys. If you were to get crucified by the Romans, they're trying to put you on display and tell everybody, look at this person, don't be like them, because we all agree these are awful people. He's got two people on either side of him. Jesus was the only one who wasn't awful. He was there because it was a frame job, because the religious authorities were threatened by him. They didn't love Jesus. They didn't love the work of God. They actually loved their own seat of power, and Jesus was threatening that. And Jesus is crucified on side of either people who are having major, major problems, have had major problems. Jesus, at this point, he's been beaten. He's been spit upon. He's been clubbed. He's had a crown of thick thorns woven and jammed on his head to sort of mock him and say, oh, yeah, right, you're king of the Jews. Sure, you're king of the Jews. Yeah, we're going to mock that by putting a crown on top of you. They're doing everything they can to humiliate him. And while he's bleeding in a bloody pulp, arms stretched open, on a cross, look at what he says. He says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Forgive them, they know what they do. That's love right there. You know you love somebody when you're willing to forgive somebody and they're not even asking for forgiveness. Many of us, we don't grant forgiveness unless someone does the exact right repentance exercise. They cry, I'm sorry. They cry, they get on their knees, they say the right words, they repay you back everything that they took from you and interest. They just don't understand that love doesn't wait for all the right circumstances. Love just gives. Love just is. There's a person inside of our community. His name is Owen, who's come to understand love a little bit more by being inside of our community. Let's hear his story.
I had a group of friends, and one of these people in that group of friends, like, we got into a huge argument. And so, therefore, this friend, like, told all my other friends, like, bad things about me, like, lies, rumors. And so that turned all those friends, like, against me. Like, they didn't even, like, come to me to, like, ask me if any of it was true. I felt abandoned. I thought I'd never be loved like how I thought they loved me. It destroyed my confidence. Like, I didn't want to talk to anyone for the longest time, because I thought I was a bad person. I thought no one would want to be my friend. So I just kind of gave up. So when I started to like read the Bible more, focus on Jesus, that brokenness like went away. Like I stopped worrying about how others would think about me, and I just got closer to Jesus, and then I felt healed. There was this one particular day where one of my friends came up to me and she was like, you know, hey, like they're starting a student ministry band. And I think you're a pretty amazing drummer and I think you should join it. At the time, I thought that was a great idea because like all those friends left me. I thought this would be a good way to get them to like me again. So the first night of me drumming at the high school service, a friend of mine ended up texting me that night. And she told me, seeing me on stage, like inspired her to get closer to God. That like really like opened up my eyes. Like I was like, what am I doing? I'm trying to be up here to make friends, and I'm missing the whole point of drumming at this church. I can't be drumming here if I'm just trying to do it to get people to like me. After I started worshiping on stage more and more and more, all those people who turned against me actually came back to me and said that they were sorry and that they shouldn't have believed all these things that this person said about me, and that they've seen God in me, and that sharing God's story to them through music means like a lot to them. So I experienced Jesus's love through worshiping, like in the moment. Like I listened to the words and like I like let it soak in, and like I can just feel God like all around me. It's like he's giving me like a warm hug, you know? And that's how I feel God's love.
Owen wants to feel loved. I want to feel loved. You want to feel loved. And Jesus wants to feel loved as well. And I'm not sure how much love he's feeling while he's on a cross, while people have abandoned him and they're hurting him intentionally. And yet he says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do. Forgive him is love. Now, here's a weird thing. What does he mean when he says, for they know not what they do? They knew what they were doing, right? If you're a Roman and you take a 6-inch spike and a big wooden mallet and you drive it through a person's wrist or drive it through their feet, you know what you're doing. When you're part of the religious elite and you trump up charges and have an illegal trial, you know what you're doing. When you spit on somebody, when you club them, when you jam a throne of thorns or a crown of thorns on their head, you know what you're doing. What does he mean? They know not what they do. What he means is they don't understand the spiritual context that's behind this. They understand that you're trying to kill him, but they don't understand there's a cosmic battle playing in the background, and they're just pawns that are being played. Because God has an arch enemy. His name is Satan, or Lucifer, or the devil, or the evil one, or whatever you want to refer to him as. There's a bunch of different monikers that are in the Bible for him. And this evil entity, what he wants is to separate you and I from the love of God. That's what he wants. He wants you and I to be totally distant. And anything that God loves, he wants to crush that. God the Father loves Jesus. He wants to crush that. They knew, and he knew not what he was doing. The evil one didn't understand the spiritual stakes that were here. And all the pawns, the Romans, the religious authorities, they didn't understand that they were just being used. They didn't see there was something bigger at play. God loved Jesus, and the crushing of him played into his plan for love to be coming to you and I. By this we know love, that Jesus laid down his life for you and I, so that I don't have to ever lay down my life for myself throughout all of eternity. Because God is a just God, and the justice is taken out on Jesus, and I never have to fear going before God and wondering whether or not he's going to give me a spanking. He gave one spanking. Jesus took that spanking. He was the one guy. Out of love, he took it for me. See, the evil one is still trying to divide people from God today. That's you and I. It's not an accident that we don't feel God. Some of us don't feel God. It's not an accident that we doubt that God loves us. It's not an accident at all. That's exactly the way the evil one wants it, because he wants to break the love relationship between you and God. He wants you to be really uncertain about whether or not you matter to God. And if he can convince you of that, make you feel and believe that you are alone, so very, very alone, you'll be defeated and actually spiritually destitute. The whole cry of our hearts, the cry of our life, the cry of every story in the Bible comes to the idea of love. It's the Bible that says God is love. It's the Bible, every other iteration of that copied from the Bible. Because it's in the Bible that we see Jesus laying down his life. The last week of Jesus' life, when we look at it, all these situations, we see the test of love that's coming in. Judas betraying Jesus, because him loving actually money and power more than he actually loves the will of God. We see another woman the last week of Jesus' life coming and taking some very, very expensive perfume and breaking the bottle and smearing it all over Jesus. And people like Judas look at this and are like, what are you doing? What are you doing? This is very expensive stuff. This could be used to feed the poor. He doesn't understand this woman's love for it. Like multiple years worth of perfume. Did some research. You know what the world's most expensive perfume is? You won't believe the name. The name of it is Schmuck. That's the name of it. See, I know these things because I buy these things for my wife, and I understand these things. Now, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, $1.8 million for a bottle or some such thing. Crazy, crazy, crazy. It would be a love offering to pour that out on Jesus and say, I just love you. I want to sacrifice for you just like you've loved me and sacrificed for me. What we long for, our hearts want, is to be loved, to have a connection with God. And Jesus goes through all these things the final week to connect us to God, to restore or begin for the very first time the love relationship that God has for you and for me. Let's try to relive that last week.
You have stepped into a sacred, supernatural story. There was a beautiful plan for mankind to live in relationship with a God who loved them. But there was a fall, and after Adam, all would be born into death. outside of the garden, outside of relationship with the Maker. It was a tragedy that would echo through time. Now death ruled life, but there was a promise made. God would make everything new. He promised that every part of our dead hearts would come back to life. That once his son paid the price, once death was defeated, the death working in us daily, in our hearts, in our souls, would be defeated also. We would be made new, here and now, resurrected. This is an ancient story. This is the story of today. Of God's promise to defeat death, the one who would save us. His claim threatened the establishment and enraged the leadership of his day. They arrested him and brought him before the Roman governor Pilate. He asked the crowd, "What shall I do then with Jesus who is called the Messiah?" And the crowd screamed, "Crucify him!" Pilate asked the crowd, "What crime has he committed?" But the crowd just screamed louder, "Crucify him!" Days of darkness. His followers were left wondering, how could this be love? It certainly wasn't the love they wanted. They wanted love that looked like stain and fighting the system. Love that looked like rebellion and revolution. Love that fought for physical freedom from those that oppressed them. But love that laid down its life for their spiritual freedom? Love that had the long game in its sights? Love that wasn't about immediate satisfaction or the lifting of current pain? Didn't make any sense to them. It felt like love had lost.
Do you feel the world is broken?
We do.
Do you feel the shadows deepen? Do you know that all the dark won't stop the light from getting through?
We do.
Do you wish that you could see it all made new? We do. Is all creation groaning? Is a new creation coming? Is the glory of the Lord to be the light within our midst? And is it good that we remind ourselves of this? It is. Is anyone worthy? Is anyone whole? Is anyone able to break the seal and open the scroll? The Lion of Judah, who conquered the grave. He's David's ruler, the Lamb who died to ransom the slave. Is he worthy? Is he worthy of all blessing and honor and glory? Is he worthy of this? He yes, he is, yes, he is. Does our Father truly love us?
He does.
Does the Spirit move among us?
He does.
And is Jesus our Messiah, hold forever those he loves?
He does.
Does our God intend to dwell again with us?
He does.
Oh, is anyone worthy? Is anyone whole? Is anyone able to break the seal and open the scroll? The Lion of Judah who conquered the grave.
Third day, love delivered on his promise to conquer death.
day was silent, yes, surely it was through. But since we're as impossible, we'll never stop you. The Friday's disappointment is Sunday's empty tomb. But since we're as impossible, we'll never stop you. Come on, y'all, stand and sing with us.
This is the sound of dry bones rattling.
Yeah.
This is the praise, make a dead man walk again.
I'm walking down.
Open the grave, I'm coming out. I'm gonna live again.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the sound of dry bones rattling.
Pentecostal fire is stirring something new. Gonna run out of miracles anytime soon. Come on!
Your resurrection power, it runs in my veins too. And I believe there's another miracle here in this room.
Come on, say!
This is the sound of dry bones rattling.
Yeah!
And this is the praise, make a dead man walk again.
Jesus. And what he did was he literally, physically, and historically came back from the dead, and people didn't believe. You might not believe. People back then didn't believe. Two women went, were the first people to find them. Talk about rules of court. In rules of court, women couldn't give testimony, but the Bible's recording history because they're the first ones to give testimony and say, I saw it. The dead bones are rattling. The dead bones are rattling. He's out. I don't know where he is. Thomas, we know him as Doubting Thomas. He said, no way, I don't believe it. I wouldn't believe it until I could stick my hands into the wounds of his side and through his wrists. I don't believe it. Well, here it is. This is the sound of dead bones rattling. Thomas, Jesus shows up, here I am. You know, what would it sound like if you started the rattle? If you came in here just out of obligation this Easter, if you came in here just because, well, I can do something to get me a pickup, but you actually had your bones rattling. Open it up, open it up, open it up, open up. Come on, let's do it again. Come on, let's do another part of that. Come on. I want some dead bones rattling in here. Come on.
This is the sound of dry bones rattling. This is the phrase, make a dead.
this end part of the story while we're here. When Jesus is on the cross, he's got people on either side of them. They're going to be dry bones at any moment. At any moment, they're going to be gone. Here's what happens in verse 39. One of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? Do you not fear God?" And the guy turns and he looks to Jesus. He says, "Hey, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Remember me." Maybe this guy was there at the Sermon on the Mount, and he heard Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount. Maybe he did something awful later on that caused him to get crucified. Or maybe he was on the run from the law and he did something awful when he was at the Sermon on the Mount. Or maybe he saw one of the miracles Jesus did, one of the ways that he loved people. He saw it. So all I know is you're of a spiritual kingdom, a spiritual reality that's not this Roman kingdom. And he looks at him and said, "When you remember me, will you remember me when you come to your kingdom?" And here's what Jesus says. Jesus says to him this, verse 42. He said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you'll be with me in paradise." Today you'll be with me in paradise. Today will you be, today, today. Dry bones are rattling. They're gonna be rattling, but today you're gonna be with me in paradise. There wasn't any like, first you have to believe these five things. First you have to believe in all of this stuff. First you have to get baptized. First you have to go to new members class. No, today, today. I don't know where you are with God before you came in here, but today, today, today your bones can rattle. Today, the power of the resurrection can come to you. We're drawn to pastels and flowers and all that kind of stuff during springtime because I believe the spiritual reality is some of us were in the dark, dead of winter. And maybe you came in here and something started to bud. Your dead bones are starting to rattle. I hear the sound. I hear the sound. Justin, you hear the sound? Bands and all of a sudden, I hear the sound. I hear the sounds of dead bones rattling right now. Come on, let's open them up. Let's do it again.
See, this is the sound.
Today, you can feel the love of God. Today, you can be in the love of God, whether you feel it or not. Today, you can be equipped for tomorrow. Today, a new level of paradise can happen for you. But you must do what this guy has done. And he's looked to Jesus and said, "Remember me." It wasn't a specific prayer, but I can lead you through a prayer if you want to give your life to Christ for the very first time right now. The important thing isn't the exact words. It's the inclination of a heart of love that you have for God to just say to him, "As broken as my heart is, and as ill-formed as my heart is, and as unfeeling as my heart may be sometimes, I feel enough right now that I want to be closer to you in your love. I want to give my life for you." You can just say something like this. You can repeat after me. If you want Jesus, I want your love. I ask you, forgive me for my sin. I give you my life right now. Would you fill me, please, with your Holy Spirit? And I will walk with you in a relationship the rest of my life. In your name I pray. Amen. Man, hey, welcome to the greatest family that's ever been, the family of God. God's done a great thing this Easter. He's doing a great thing in you right now. He's worthy of singing to. Let's do that.
Glory in creation now revealed. When you walked in the crossroads, you got something to celebrate communion with. If you're at home with us in a coffee shop, in a bar, wherever you are, just go ahead and get yourself something to eat and something to drink. God will understand the inclination of your heart. People have been celebrating this since Jesus left the earth. He told us when we gather together to do this. If you've given your life to Christ, this signifies when you bring Jesus into your life, you're remembering that by bringing these elements into your body again, and you're remembering just how he took his body, which is the little wafer on top, or the bread or the cracker, wherever you are, and he broke it. He broke it and said, I love you so much that I'm going to break my body for you. The love of God seen in the breaking of bread and the nailing of Jesus on the cross, done for you out of love. Take and eat. And you can peel back the top if you're inside of a Crossroads building right now for where the juice is, or take whatever liquid you have, wherever you are. This blood signifies the love of Jesus that spilled blood on our behalf. His own blood trickled down his face, trickled down his back, pulled the ground of where the cross was. It's a sign of his love for us. It's a sign of a covenant that he makes with us, a covenant of love and relationship for all of eternity. This cup isn't for those who are perfect. This cup is for those who are forgiven. This cup isn't for those who are perfect. This cup is for those who are loved. That is you and that's I. The blood of Christ, take and drink.
Compares.
If you made the choice today to step towards the ultimate, the greatest love ever, I want you to go to crossroads.net right now. Someone is waiting to chat with you.
And if you're a giver, I just want to say thank you. You make all of this possible. If you want to join in on the giving, go to crossroads.net/give. You're empowering this message and what's coming in the future, like Mother's Day.
That's right.
Where we're going to give your mom a horse. It's going to be amazing, right?
Not exactly, but it is, I mean, kind of, sort of close. Anyway, there's an epic surprise that we don't want you to miss, and we want you to come back in a couple weeks for it.
And speaking of epic, we're doing something as a community that I think is epic, to thank our educators.
That's right.
If you want to join in, we'd love you to. You can check this out. Thanks for being with us.
Over the past 2 years of the pandemic, more than half of all educators have considered quitting their jobs. Yet they've responded to these challenging times in many courageous ways. And despite uncertainty, exhaustion, and discouragement, they've continued to provide safe and encouraging learning environments for their students, impacting the lives of thousands in the next generation. We see you. We applaud you. We are grateful for you. Join us this spring when for 1 week we'll pack ourselves a brown bag lunch every day and give the money we save from not eating out straight to hardworking educators. That same week, we'll be using an app designed to guide us on an epic adventure to encourage all the hardworking people continuing to serve in our schools. Along with packing our lunches, we'll be doing other fun and practical activities to surprise and delight our educators.
Mrs. Wu, thank you for teaching me how to be a leader. This is for you.
Principal Tomasini, your commitment to the students of our school still inspires me today. This is for you.
Miss Ellen, this is for you.
Joe, thanks for keeping us safe at school. This is for you.
Mr. Loizo, thank you for encouraging me to take risk in theater class. This is for you.
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 Join us in celebrating and blessing the educators in your life. Go to crossroads.net/educators for more info.
This is for you.